Growing up in Baltimore in the 1950s, John Waters was not quite like the other kids. He was obsessed by violence and gore, both real and on the screen. With his weird counterculture friends as his cast, he began making silent 8 and 16 millimeter films in the mid-1960s. He screened these in rented Baltimore church halls to underground audiences drawn by word of mouth. As his filmmaking developed and his subject matters more shocking, his audiences grew bigger. By the early 1970s, John was making features, which were shown in midnight screenings in art cinemas. Major success came in 1972 with Pink Flamingos, a deliberate exercise in ultra-bad taste. Waters continued to make low-budget, shocking movies with his Dreamland Repertory Company until Hollywood crossover success came with Hairspray in 1988. Waters fans also know that John is an author. Today, we'll speak with him about his new bestseller, Carsick. Welcome, John. It's a pleasure to have you back with us on the Book Report.
Thank you. Good to be here. You know, book reports, though, are why I didn't read till I was 16, because they made me read the most boring books, and to read was torture because I knew I had to do a report on it. Book reports discourage reading.
Okay, but we at the Book Report encourage reading.
I agree. That's what book reports should be. Adults, people talking about books because they want to, not because they had to.
Gotcha. Okay, answer this question for me. It is one you posed in the beginning of the book. Is it possible to be a vagrant when you can own 3 homes and rent another in P-Town for the summer?
No. Basically, I was like the book Black Like Me, only was poor like me. I was a faux vagrant. However, yes, because technically I had a credit card in my pocketbook that I could have called a helicopter to come get me if I really wanted to. But I didn't have a follow-up. I almost had to spend the night in the woods one night. Just having a credit card, I didn't use it to do anything like that. I paid for somebody's gas. It didn't have any gas. I stayed in cheap motel, whatever was available on the way. So yes, I wasn't truly homeless, and it really drove home that point when other poor people would see me hitchhiking and had no idea who I was or anything, thought I was a poor 68-year-old, 60, I was 66 at the time, 66-year-old man hitchhiking, would come over to try to give me money, and one woman wouldn't leave till I took it. And I could see she seemed like a poor woman with a couple kids in her car, like driving somewhere along. So that was very moving to me, and I gave the money away and like pocketed, thanks. But still, it did make me understand, certainly. I would see people that you thought, my God, I'm just so lucky. You know, why didn't I give her $500, actually?
Early on in the book, in the actual retelling of your travels, you ended up in the back of a cop car. You want to share that story?
Well, in the first part of the book that is fictional, that I imagine the best and the worst, I am in the back seat of a police car when I'm entrapped in Kansas and arrested for sodomy, where technically that is still illegal for hetero, homosexual, any kind of couple. But in real life, I did get a ride with a cop. And the first cop came by and said, you can't hitchhike here. And I said, well, the other cop said I couldn't. It was the end of his shift, so he just let me go. The next day, I was stuck there for a whole day. So the cop saw me a lot standing there. Finally, he pulled over and then checked to see if I had warrants. And then I said, no, but I have a fame kit here I want to show you, which I had, which my assistant made. That it was so ridiculous. I had my Academy card, like, I vote for the Oscars. Like, that's going to get me out of jail, right? And a clipping about Hairspray or anything. So he looked through the whole thing real seriously, didn't say anything, and finally said, doesn't say you're a professional hitchhiker, which I thought was pretty funny. And I said, well, that means you can give me a ride. He said, okay, I will. Oh. And he was great. He gave me a ride as far as he legally could in his area. And then he said, I'll come check on you later. And I didn't get a ride. I was there for like 6 hours. And then he came back and gave me grief. He said, shake your sign or something. Like, I was a lazy hitchhiker. But he was very, very nice.
What percentage of folks who actually picked you up recognized you?
I would say only one of 12 of 21 rides, the very first ride, because it was right near my house. But many recognized me and drove past and debated, is that me? And then came back and picked me up. Maybe a third. The next third didn't know until I got in the car or tried to give me money and then realized it was me and started yelling and laughing. And the other third, if I said I was not even me, they didn't know who me was. But if they said I was a film director or anything, they just acted like I said I was President Kennedy, you know, like I was a deluded homeless man off his meds. So I tried. I just said, OK, when I realized that, I just, you know, I wanted to hear their story. I have to give interviews about myself every day. It's the last thing I want to do when I'm writing a book. I know my story. I wanted to hear theirs. The only reason you tell them your story is to get so they tell you stuff.
How did you dream up this adventure?
I just needed some street cred. My life is very organized, planned. I just wanted to give up that control and see what would happen. And I always hitchhiked. I hitchhiked when I was a kid. My parents thought it was fine. It wasn't thought of as bad. I don't know why. Same perverts were out there then. Same serial killers. They just, maybe you didn't know about them or there weren't movies about them. I think the Texas Chainsaw Massacre hitchhiker made no one ever hitchhike again. And then I hitchhiked in the hippie years all the time. Everybody did. And then I hitchhiked as an adult in a province town to the beach I wanted to go to because I didn't have a sticker to park there. And that was as an adult. And then I started asking people to go on hitchhiking dates with me because it was a 10-mile trip. It wasn't. And it was fun. And then that, and I always liked hitchhiking. So then I decided to do the book. And it seemed like a great idea until the day I walked out the door to do it. And then I thought, are you nuts? You know, especially it started pouring rain. And then I would wake up in those days in some motel, and the first thing wake up and think, you're really doing this? You know, I'm a third of the way there and think, oh, I'd look at the map and think, it's so far, you know. And so there were days that are very hard to remember now because I know I made it. I know it turned out fine. But you don't know that when you're in the middle of it and you're standing there for 8 hours, 10 hours, and you don't have a ride. You think, this could take a year.
Wasn't one of your hitchhiking dates with Patty Hearst?
I did hitchhike with Patty Hearst. She was funny about it. Her husband gave me so much grief about it afterwards. He said, haven't we had enough trouble? I said, yeah, but I haven't.
Some clarification. Have you met or ever driven with Connie Francis?
No, I haven't. I have met Connie Francis.
We're speaking with John Waters on the Book Report. So pirate truck stops, they don't actually exist?
They do actually exist. They don't have them on the major interstates anymore. The truck stops there are so no fun. They're so regulated. The trucker picked me up and he said, it's no fun anymore. You have to have two drivers. So one sleeps and the other one. So you're never going to get a ride with a truck anymore. They all have chips in them so they know exactly where they are. They only allowed to work so many hours a day. It's like computers are in there and stuff. It's fancy in those trucks now. The real ones are in the south a lot. They're off the major road, and they're not quite as wild as the one I imagined, but from what I've heard, close.
All right. Tell us about the Corvette Kid, and do you still keep in touch with him?
Yeah, he's the Corvette Man now. I think he's an adult. The Corvette Kid was a 19-year-old or 20-year-old elected Republican official in Millersville, Maryland, and he was on the way to get his lunch at the Subway shop, and it was pouring rain, and he picked me up. He didn't know who I was, even when I told him, never heard any of the movies. And we just kept talking, and he drove me to Ohio. And his parents were completely freaked out. That's like 4 hours. You know, he was missing. And then he said he was with me. And when your parents Google me, it isn't good. You know, they look up, say, friends of the Manson family, because I'm still trying to help Leslie Van Houten get parole that I wrote about in my last book. But still, they don't know any of that. They say, oh, great. And that I made the most disgusting movie ever made, Pink Flamingos. I just received some Best Gay Man of the Year award. You know, everything that would make a parent of a Republican elected official balk. And, but he dropped me off in Ohio and went home, and I'm sure they gave him grief. So then I'm getting stuck in Ohio. I'm going, it's like days later, and he keeps texting me saying, I'm going to come gay. And I think, sure, sure, sure. So finally, I get this ride in Kansas, a really good ride. It's really long, like, you know, all the way to Denver, pretty much. So he's saying, I've told him that. And he said, you're kidding. I'm driving 48 hours at 80 miles an hour to catch up with you.
Aww.
And he did. And then gave me a ride a lot of the way to the rest, you know. And then I just gave him keys to my apartment in San Francisco. And just go stay there till I get there. And he told his parents that. And they said, you're back there? And then they said, I love this line. His mother said it was a great movie line if they ever make the movie. She said he told her that he was with me again and I had given him keys to my apartment. He was going to go there, but I wouldn't be there. And she, there was stunned silence. And then she said, say out loud on the speakerphone what you just told me so your father can hear this. So I think, I hope, he would never let me talk to her. So I tried to calm her. And I get why she was upset, but what an adventure he had. We're still friends. He came to my Christmas party. He looks great. He's got a new great girlfriend. He moved out. I think he gave him confidence. I think he's doing great.
Still in government?
No, he didn't run again.
Mm.
You're a days in kind of guy. Tell us why.
Well, I'm more of a Chateau Marmont kind of guy.
Of course, in this book, in the framework of the book, let me clarify, in the framework of the book.
In Route 70, all the way across, I stayed in a mall, and I would say Days Inn was consistently the best, and Holiday Inn was the worst. The only time I had a mean person was in a Holiday Inn, and she told me if I flashed the sign one more time to a guest, my hitchhiking sign, she would call the police. And I said, well, that man, I was just waiting. He looked like the type that would pick me up. She said, that was my husband.
All right. We all hitchhiked in college and high school, but...
You'd be surprised.
Anybody over 50 has hitchhiked and would never do it again. All young people have never hitchhiked and want to, but are scared to.
But would you advise your younger friends to head to a highway on-ramp and stick out their thumbs?
Yes. I would do a trainer wheels short-term, hitchhike to the store, hitchhike to the movies, hitchhike 10 miles away to something. Always use a sign. But yes, I think that I'm for everyone having an adventure. I think the most unsafe thing you can do is stay home.
Let's talk about your home for a minute. Baltimore, how has the city evolved in the last couple of years, and what do you think of its future?
I think it's the best it's ever been because, A, it's the only cheap city left on the East Coast. You can still have Bohemia there. All the kids from New York are moving there. We have a great music scene, Future Islands, Beach House, all the Dan Deacon, big nationwide hits. They all stayed in Baltimore. They all bought houses there. I think it is the last place you can be a bohemian.
And final thoughts about Carsick?
Well, my final thoughts, I'm thrilled it was on the New York Times bestseller list for 7 weeks. You know, things have changed. That's possible even is amazing and very, very gratifying to me. And all my books are still in print. Shock Value came out in 1980. It's never gone out of print. Crackpot, all of them. So it's obviously a world I like very much because they seem to like me. You know, my last movie was not a success financially. So I guess you stick in the field where you're doing the best.
Well, your book was laugh out loud funny, and I want to thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you. It's good. I like your new set here.